This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Overtime here on The Fan. Chris, you tell me, Doc really pumped me up. Did I deliver in the first hour? I mean, he's talking me up, saying I'm throwing 104 on the black. Like, I don't know that that's happening, but I was hoping I was pumping 90. Did I do a good job, Chris?
Look,
was I living up to the hype?
I think starting off with the Freebird solo is that's a good way to come out firing, man. That's a good way to come out firing.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad I'm at least able to deliver somewhat on whatever. Doc hypes me up a little bit too much, I feel like, sometimes. But hey, man.
He's a good hype man, though. It's part of the fun of working with Doc, you know?
Listen, man, if you would have told me a decade ago that Doc Walker would be hyping me up before I get to host a show here, I would not have believed you. So I'm pretty fired up.
I used to listen to him 20 years ago on the John Thompson show all the time, man.
Oh, yeah. He's a legend. It's a privilege to follow the DOC. If you missed any of that earlier today, you can check out the podcast. Always use the Rewind feature on your Odyssey app as well. 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener line. So we played a clip from Pete Prisco earlier saying that all of the success that Washington had this year is sustainable because of the quarterback. Now the question becomes, if you're Washington, if you're Adam Peters, how do you build that sustainable winner? You've got the quarterback, which is the hardest part, but how do you build around him so that you're perennially in that conversation as one of the best teams in the league? Let's get out to line three. Kevin is in Fort Washington. Kevin, what's going on?
Yeah, hi, good evening. How y'all doing?
Doing great, Kevin. How about you?
Okay. Now, I remember when they played at RFK Stadium with Joe Gibbs. I went to all three of the parades. How he did it, he built from the inside out. If you think about it, Mark Ripken was not a all-pro quarterback like that. None of them were. But the offensive line, because they had good receivers. They had good receivers. But if you got an offensive line that can block, that block for John Riggins, and then upheld the end of it to get the ball down the field, and even when Dallas won the Super Bowls, you build from the inside out. That's how you did it. And then on defense, you had Dexter Manley, Charles Mann, and Dave Butts, and Daryl Grant. Those guys that you had up front, those were your warriors. So we're getting away from what got us championships a while ago. And it's not hard to see.
Yeah, 100%, Kevin. Appreciate the phone call. And to me, the thing here is, I don't know as much that they've gotten away from it. Because if you look at what this team has tried to do before the takeover with Adam, but we're talking Ron Rivera era, which we're going to talk about that in just a little bit, and why this team's in the spot it's in, and how to build a sustainable winner. Ron didn't do that. But look, defensive line, they tried that, right? They four first-rounders on the D-line? I got sick of hearing that. Because, frankly, you had four first-rounders on the D-line, I was told, time and time and time and time and time again. Every single time a broadcast seemed to bring it up, if there's four first-rounders on the D-line, I should have seen the impact that Philadelphia had in the Super Bowl on every team. Didn't matter who their offensive line was. I should be seeing dudes constantly in the backfield up in the quarterback's grill, and I didn't see that. So I don't know that it's necessarily they got away from it. Now, O-line has never been as much of a priority as it should be. You know, that's something that Philadelphia and Howie Roseman does a good job of every single year. you're drafting an O lineman or a D lineman in the first round or two. Every single year, you're drafting one of those guys so that if one of those dudes goes down, right? Like, Jason Kelce retired, one of the greatest centers, if not the greatest center of all time, retires. You've got a guy to fill in. Now, there were some growing pains there, but he'd already been playing, too, at a different spot. You know, Landon Dickerson's able to step in. Cam Jurgens is able to go. You know, Mekhi Becton, they bring him in. Lane Johnson's one of the best right tackles to ever play the game. Right there, just constantly. Mailata was someone who they've coached up. It's another big part is having an offensive line coach that can coach these guys into being really, really good players. But they're just constantly bringing dudes in. Think back to the Super Bowl they won against the Patriots. They're rotating through a bunch of dudes. This year, Jalen Carter's making a difference. Milton Williams making a difference. Jordan Davis, Nolan Smith, Josh Sweat. I mean, holy smokes. It's one thing to have the four. It's another thing where they're rotating through seven or eight, and they're not just five deep on the O-line, they're seven and eight deep. So it takes some time, and this is where I think it gets interesting when you start talking about the Myles Garretts, potentially going after a T. Higgins, and some of these other things where, you know, I guess free agency is a little bit different, but when you're talking about trading for one of these guys, and you're saying you're going to have to give up multiple first, I don't necessarily, if they traded for Myles Garrett tomorrow, I'm not going to suddenly be frustrated. Like, I'd be totally down with it. One, I trust Adam Peters, but he's a difference maker on that defensive side of the ball. Myles Garrett is. But you have to think, how did Philly get to this point? They have so many dudes that they've drafted and brought in, but specifically through the draft. Dickerson's a draft pick. Jurgens is a draft pick. Lane Johnson's a draft pick. On the defensive side, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Milton Williams, like all these dudes are draft picks. So if you want to give up a couple of draft picks, I understand it, but I don't know, man. Maybe your best route is just to continue building so that if you want to be Philadelphia. Philadelphia didn't turn things around in one season. It's been built over time. And that's where I think this becomes a very intriguing discussion. Where when we talk about this, I want to see them win the Super Bowl next year. I do. And I frankly would probably be fine if they went all in and said, we're going to win the Super Bowl next year. But the other thing is, if you're Adam Peters, I want to win a Super Bowl next year. I want to win a Super Bowl in 2026. I want to win one in 2027. I want to be competitive to win one in 2028. I want to win one every year that Jaden Daniels is my quarterback. And if you're going to do that, maybe your best route is just to continue to build and build and build and build. You know, your foundation is here now. The thing that you're built on is here now. And Jaden Daniels doesn't mean now I start going a little bit crazy and I throw everything at the wall and see what happens, and suddenly, in a few years, I've kind of, the foundation outside of Jaden's shoddy again. What they've done a good job of in Philadelphia is it's build and build and build and build and build and build and build, and the weakest dude on their roster in terms of starters is probably their quarterback, which, by the way, people aren't giving him enough credit in how he played in the Super Bowl. I know it was never a close game, really, but he played a heck of a game in the Super Bowl. But they have done a good job of building and building and building instead of trying to take the get-rich-quick approach. They haven't done that. And in turn, they've got a roster that they might lose a couple of guys this offseason. And, okay, next. Not to say that Josh Sweat or someone like that is just, oh, man, they're not going to feel, you know, they're not going to miss that guy. No, they will. They miss Jason Kelce this year. But they also still won the Super Bowl, right? Like, they had dudes ready to roll. If you're Washington, when you look at the roster that they have right now going into next season, they need help. I would like to see upgrades on the offensive line, specifically on the left side, either left tackle or left guard. Because if you draft a left tackle or you were to get a left tackle, you could kick Coleman into left guard, and I think he'd be fine there. I think you're fine at center. Right tackle needs an upgrade. Right guard, like I was talking about earlier with Cosme, I don't know that I'd count on him any earlier than week 10. If he comes back after week 4, week 5, great. That's gravy to me. That's awesome. But I would have a contingency plan for him to miss half the season next year. Okay, so that's three positions there. tight end, you have to make a decision on whether Zach Ertz is coming back. I think he could still upgrade at tight end if you want a real difference maker there. There's another position you're looking at. Wide receiver, you need someone outside of Terry. The only dudes under contract, by the way, right now, Terry and Luke McCaffrey. So you have to sign at least four or draft, sign and draft at least four. So there's another position you need. Running back, I don't think was as impactful as you'd think. I mean, Jaden Daniels is a running quarterback, and you didn't have a rushing a runner go for 1,000 yards, and your second half rushing attack, non-Jaden Daniels, was horrendous. I think you need to upgrade at running back. You look at defensive end, Dorrance Armstrong, he's fine. He's a number two defensive end, which, by the way, when they signed him, that's kind of what I thought he was. He was exactly what I thought he was. It's not special. That's fine. You didn't pay him special money. That's okay. Dante Fowler, is he going to come back? Situational pass rusher, double-digit sacks this year. Okay, but there's still questions at D-end. You want to improve at D-end. D-tackle, you're not getting what you're paying for at D-tackle, but that's maybe the one position that you're like, okay, if you just ran it back with Payne and Allen and Johnny Newton, okay, you'd be all right. Maybe you don't feel like you have to upgrade. I still think you should, but maybe you don't feel that way. Okay. Linebacker, you got to make a decision on Wagner. Are you bringing him back? Luvu's awesome, but is Jordan McGee going to step into that spot? I don't know. Are you going to go sign Nick Bolton? Corner, you've got Sanders still. You've got Lattimore. You're praying that Lattimore, what happened this year when he came over, was just an anomaly, and he's able to get back to an elite level. But you got to do something at the other corner spot. All right, so that's another spot you got. And safety. I just named the entire football team you feel like you still got to upgrade. I just went through darn near every position. You want to get to special teams? They probably need a kicker. You're looking at the entire football team feeling that needs to be upgraded. The point of this exercise is look at Philadelphia. They've got some question marks about guys coming back. But, okay, they don't need to upgrade quarterback. They don't need to upgrade running back. Tight end is fine. O-line's good. D-line's fine, even though they're losing a couple of guys. Maybe you want to see upgrades at safety. Depending upon what they do with Zach Bond, maybe they need to upgrade at linebacker. And I get this team won the Super Bowl they've been building. My point is they're built, right? Washington is building. If you view it as, all right, let's mortgage some of the future with some of these picks, some of these things, and we're going to say, you know what, let's skip this, and maybe we're going to be weak at this spot, but we're going to have Myles Garrett, and that should make up for it. That's a fine decision. You just have to understand that a team like Philadelphia that is just built and built and built and built and built, they don't have to deal with this. And so if Philadelphia decided to go out tomorrow and trade two ones and a player of some sort, whoever it may be, to go get Myles Garrett, they're not going to feel it nearly as much as you here in Washington. I don't want them to go get Myles Garrett. The Lions could go do the same thing, right? They don't have as many needs as Washington. I just think it's an intriguing discussion when you say you want to build this thing to be sustainable and you want to be good for the next decade plus. Is it the most prudent move when I just went through and said nearly every position on the football team, credit to them, quarterback is not a need that needs to be upgraded. Because frankly, probably can't be upgraded. You already got a top five guy, right? Outside of quarterback, though, I named almost every position. I'm good at center. I'm good at right guard when Cosme comes back. Where else you feeling great? Wide receiver one with Terry. That's my point. There's a lot of holes on this roster. If you think that you can give up and live a little bit with some of these weaknesses and go get a Myles Garrett, by all means. I also wouldn't blame them if they said, I would love to have Myles Garrett. Now's not the time for that. Maybe Micah Parsons comes available next offseason. Maybe that's the time to go for it when hopefully you've patched up some of these other holes and you say, okay, now we can go get the luxury guy. Now we can go do that. Think of the Niners when they went after Christian McCaffrey. They traded the equivalent of a first-round pick for a running back, which was just, you know, people are making fun of them for because it's a running back. Well, they had everything else, so they could push it over the top. People were not thrilled with the Lions taking Jahmyr Gibbs where they did. But they had everything else. You add in the running back, and he's a difference maker. Look what happened with Saquon. The point is, that's luxury. When you've got everything else good, then you can go with luxury. I don't want to spend $1 million on a car when I don't even have a house to live in. Right? That's luxury. I need to have the necessities, but I don't want to overspend on something when it's a luxury item that I don't have everything else set yet. 800-636-1067. We'll get to some of your phone calls next. We're going to be joined by Varun Shankar of the Washington Post coming up at 2:30. Want to talk a little bit of Wizards basketball with him. But your phone calls on how Washington builds that sustainable winner. We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on a Sunday afternoon on The Fan, the first Sunday without football. Kind of sucks. We get to this point every year, and it sucks every year. Not having football is rough. But don't worry. We're still talking some pigskin here on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 4 o'clock. We're going to talk with Varun Shankar coming up in just a couple of minutes. Get his thoughts on the Wizards. He wrote a great piece on Alex Sarr. We'll talk with him coming up in just a little bit. But let's talk with you guys. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in. Let's get out to Mac in Chattanooga. Mac, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Appreciate the show, man. Keeping me dialed into the area. I think, you know, y'all been talking about it, building from the outside and from the inside out. And I think the draft evaluation is going to be telling. If Adam Peters goes out and makes a trade for Garrett, then that makes me think that he doesn't think the depth is there on the defensive line. But from everything I've heard is the defensive line is strong in the draft this year. So I think he's going to go and sign like an offensive lineman, maybe like a Stanley from Baltimore, and hopefully address the defensive line in the draft if it is that strong.
Yeah, Mac, appreciate the phone call. It's a good point that he brings up about the draft, because this is one reason that I would not be shocked if they did make the Myles Garrett trade, even though I've kind of been talking myself out of it. This draft class isn't particularly strong in the first round, right? Picking at 29, I think Matt Miller of ESPN said that he had about 13 or 14 first-round grades on players, so not even half the players that are going to get drafted in the first round he has first-round grades on. If that's the case, then maybe you don't mind moving off this year's first-round pick, because to Mac's point, there is depth on the defensive line, specifically defensive tackle, where I think Daniel Jeremiah said he had 24 draftable defensive tackles. That's not saying they're first-round guys, but that's someone maybe you can find in the third or fourth or fifth round that's, okay, I may miss out on my first-round pick who's not elite because you're drafting 29 and you're going to miss out on that top level. So maybe instead of it truly being a one, you view it as a second-round talent. Next year's one might be a little bit different, but you're trading essentially a second-round talent and a first-rounder for, you know, a future Hall of Famer. Maybe that changes your discussion and your feel on it, but I think that's an intriguing point that if they decide to trade, maybe that speaks more about the draft class and them not feeling like they can fill the needs that they want in the way that they really want to with the elite talent through this year's draft. Appreciate the phone call, Mac. Let's get out to Mitch in New Jersey. Mitch, what's going on?
Hey, what's cracking? How you doing? First of all, I don't want to give up a first, second-round pick, even for Miles. You know, he's like 30. I know he's really good. What if one of the Boses come available? Then I'll be willing to younger, I'd be willing to give up like a second-round pick for Bosa. I mean, they still don't have leverage, those two teams. But we got to get ourselves another defense lineman. Keep Fowler and Farrell. They don't sound the same. And we definitely got to get wide receiver and a running back. Make sure by the draft or free agency, make sure they just run like mad at the grass. It's a Burt Reynolds line from King and
yep.
Queens.
Mitch, appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I think to his phone call, though, he brings up the point that I brought up earlier. He's like, yeah, we need to upgrade running back, wide receiver, defensive line. I mean, just suddenly we're running through the whole football team. And that's the other thing, too, that I thought Linnell did a good job of on overtime the other night. They're going to throw out there that they have the, I believe, third most cap space in the National Football League this offseason. That is correct, technically. That is correct, technically. The issue is they also had a lot of one-year contracts. Think of your favorite players from this past season with the exception of Luvu and Eckler that were newcomers to this team. probably a one-year contract. Jeremy Chinn, 1 year. Wagner, 1 year. Ertz, 1 year. They're going to have to make a decision on a lot of these guys. So while they might have the third most cap space, they also have maybe the most empty roster spots where they have to spend money regardless of if it's a same guy or not. So suddenly, that cap space was huge, dwindles to about, okay, maybe you've only actually got about $30, $35, $40 million to play with versus an 80 to 90 number where, in reality, you're still just going to have to spend to get guys, too. Even if they're just back-end roster filler type guys, you're still going to have to spend to just go get those guys. Let's get out to Jack in D.C. Jack, what's going on?
Hey, Jack from D.C. here. The Commanders, for my money, need to put a receiver on the other side of Terry. Left hand up, I'd like to be T. Higgins. But to sustain the Commanders' glory years, we have to solidify the trenches. All this needs to be done while Jaden is most importantly on his rookie deal and Peters can't help but falling in love with the cap flexibility. Because of that, raise hail and Jack from D.C. out.
I love it. Maybe we should have phone callers
do that
a little bit more. Yeah, I like that. Just you call in, introduce yourself, give your take, and then sign off. Maybe he needs my job. Maybe he could just come take my job. No, he did a heck of a job. Appreciate the phone call, Jack. Yeah, T. Higgins is interesting. Again, some of these things, it's interesting because in years past with Ron, Scott McLuhan, Bruce Allen, it was like, I don't want them to make this move, and if they do, I'm going to be frustrated. I don't know about you, Chris. They could do anything this offseason. I'd be like, I trust Adam Peters. Like, if that's how they want to go about it, I think Adam knows what's best. I might disagree with it. I might say as much here on the airwaves, but I'll be like, you know what? Adam knows what he's doing. I don't know that I've been able to say that in my lifetime. If Bruce made a stupid move, I'm like, Bruce, you idiot. Ron, what are you doing? Scott, what the heck is that? Adam, it's like, okay, I trust him. Like, it's just, it's a totally different world that we're living in here for the Washington Commanders. 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in. We'll maybe get back into this topic in a little bit. I want to talk a little bit of hoops. Varun Shankar just wrote a really good piece on Alex Saar in the Washington Post. You can check that story out. We'll talk with him next, get his thoughts on Alex Saar and the Wizards going into the second half. Welcome back. Overtime on a Sunday afternoon here on 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 4 o'clock. It's time for us to get out to the Rood Guest Hotline. Rood is the most reliable heating and air conditioning services in the DMV. Time to welcome in our friend from the Washington Post, Varun Shankar, covers the Wizards for them. Varun, how you doing?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, can't complain. It's a little bit of a dreary day, but always good to be talking about DC sports. Varun, you just wrote a story about Alex Saar. I thought it was really good talking about some of the struggles he's gone through in his rookie season, but he's got the mentality for it. How much of that is from his ability to, or his experience of playing overseas and just the lifestyle that he's lived, that's, I mean, I don't know that any of us could really relate to this. He's leaving home at 14 to go play basketball professionally all over the world. How much of that has played into what he's been able to do as a rookie and being able to bounce back from, you know, a bad summer league performance like he had to now being a rookie of the month at one point and really being one of the best rookies in the league this year?
Yeah, I think with Alex, it all starts with this emotional maturity he has that far outpaces what you'd expect from a guy who's 19 years old. And I think some of that absolutely came from the unorthodox path that he took to the NBA. I mean, this is a guy who left home at 14, plays at OT in Atlanta, and then goes to Australia for a year. And, you know, this is something that general manager Will Dawkins told me. He said, Alex has had to go into new situations and be like the new kid in class, essentially. But at the same time, you're expected to make a concerted impact because you come in with the reputation of being a talented player. Like, when Alex goes to Perth, he's expected to be like a pretty key piece of them. He's not expected to be their star, but he's expected to be like a regular player for them. And for him, that's coming amid not only adjustments to a different style of basketball playing as professionals, but also a life adjustment.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because one thing that I've really liked about watching his game this year is it seems like even though maybe the numbers aren't the best, and even when he was struggling early in the year at times, it felt like he had a good feel for the game.
Yeah.
How much does playing professionally, it's something that I don't know why we did it, but we were knocking guys for it when, you know, before it became really prevalent to go international. Remember, it was something with Luka Doncic that was even brought up when he was drafted and some of these guys. How much does that experience help these guys coming in right away, being able to make an impact, even if it's not a huge impact, but being able to fit in and understand the flow of the game a little bit better?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it helps with the feel for the game part of it, but I do think it helps just in you have some of these habits already inbuilt for what you need to be a contributing professional, right? Like you have the work habits that you need in a way that you might get while you're in college, but it's a little harder to obtain, and you might have to be taught a little bit more than someone who's gone through it at a professional level already. You also had to deal with the physical strain of playing against professional guys already. And in general, you're getting tested against a higher level of competition. Like most A lot of professional leagues are better than college basketball. Just you've got older players, you've got more mature, physically mature players. So you're going against a higher level of competition is one of the big things.
What did you learn about Alex Sarr working on this story that maybe you didn't know covering him before you worked on this story, kind of profiling him?
That's a good question. What did I learn about Alex? I think I learned you see someone that's as quiet as he is, and some part of me like initially thought, could this be a problem for him down the line? Is there something something here that's potentially troubling? I don't know exactly what the word that I'm looking for is, but like, is the silence a sign of timidity in any way? And sure. I don't think it is at all. There is a real quiet assuredness about this guy. There's not a lot of doubt within Alex Sarr, and you think about that, and you kind of think that it might translate into some, you know, brashness or bravado, and it's just not there. It is so calm. It is so understated, but do not take that understatement for a lack of conviction, because it is there. And I think Alex really believes that, and this is something Dawkins told me as well. He believes that if he works on something, he has to believe that he can turn it into a strength. And he can turn a weakness into a strength with enough work, and that's. If you have that belief, and you have the belief that you could do such a thing, it motivates you to obviously do that work, and it also keeps you steady as you are able to take a long-term view of things.
Talking with Varun Shankar from the Washington Post, check out his new story talking about Alex Sarr. One more on Sarr. When the Wizards look at him, what do they think his ceiling is? Do they not know what it is? You know, are they just continuing to try to develop him and see where they get? Are they looking at this guy as a potential, you know, 25-point scorer, 12-rebound, 2-block sort of guy? Or are they just, let's see where we can get him to and we'll figure out where the ceiling is when we get there?
I think it's probably the latter. They try to be pretty opaque about these guys and what their long-term expectations are. And I think part of that is they probably have, you know, projections in mind of what these guys can become, but so much of it is variable. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, max 21-year-olds, right? Like, there's so much physical development, mental development, skill development that could happen in that time, and you don't want to put a artificial cap on someone just because you're trying to forecast things. So they're trying to leave their doors open and, you know, see where this all lands up.
Talking about the other rookies, I mean, you can throw Sarr in here as well. I thought it was interesting. Bleacher Report just put out something, a redraft of the first round, and all of the Wizards draft picks went earlier in the redraft than they were actually drafted. You know, Sarr going one, Carrington going a little bit before where he was drafted. How impressive has this rookie class been? Even, you know, going into the draft, we were all talking about, well, maybe this draft class isn't that great, and, you know, of all the years for the Wizards to get the number two pick, it's this kind of year. But Sarr has been really good. Bob Carrington's been pretty good, and Keyshawn George has as well. How impressed and how happy are they with their rookie class?
Yeah, I think that they are. They are very happy about where these guys are right now. I think every single one of them showed pretty early in the season, and maybe even in the preseason, that they could be counted on to play pretty heavy minutes and not they're not positive players. No rookie is like going to be a positive player unless you're one of one generational or really great player. But I think they have an understanding that like putting these guys out there is not going to lead to bad reps in any way. And you are seeing that they've been super impressed with their work habits, their approach, their love of the game, that kind of thing. And I think that it's reflected on the court. Every single one of them has shown that I am pretty confident at this point that, barring injuries and something unexpected, if they continue on even a modest development trajectory, all three of the rookies and adding in Bilal, all three of the draft rookies, because now AJ Johnson's there, but all three of the draft rookies are going to be contributing NBA players. To what degree is obviously up in the air, but I think they'll all be contributors and at minimum, good rotation pieces. The question becomes, obviously, does any of them have star potential? And I don't know that none of them have shown me yet that they're going to become a star, and that's still the biggest question.
One thing that's really impressed me this season is you've got a guy that's kind of now the veteran leader of this team, and he's 25 years old, Jordan Poole. And
yeah.
He has really embraced these young guys. He's always with Bilal. He's always with Bub and these guys and kind of helping them along. How important has his leadership? I mean, he's 25 years old. It's crazy to think about being the leader in that locker room, but he kind of is. How good of a leader has he been for those young guys as they go through this first NBA season?
I think he's been a really positive presence. You see it most often in – there is that – It's a very small age gap with him, right? Like you said. But I think that because he's already done so much, I mean, this is a guy who is an NBA champion, who has scored at a high level, and who has played at a high level with obviously a really good team in Golden State, he has some credibility he can bring. And I think that's really helped as he's tried to help these young guys along. I think he's also just a very personable guy. I think Jordan's really like kind of come out of his shell this season compared to what I heard he was like last season. So I think that's been good. And I think that he's really taken an interest in being a leader, but being very approachable in that process. He does not feel separate in any way from the young guys. He feels like he is one of them, but just like a little bit older and can offer a little bit of advice.
Looking at this team going down the stretch, they played much better, it felt like, the last couple of weeks before the All-Star break. What clicked for them? And maybe, it resulted in some wins. Maybe they're not going to suddenly, win 20 games on the season. But what do they want to see in the second half, that continued improvement like you saw the last couple of weeks before the break?
Yeah, they did some good stuff. I thought the offense was a little more connected. Some of it's just they knocked down three-pointers, which is a struggle for this team. But you're seeing a guy like Keyshawn George get to the shooting clip that we expected him to come into the league doing, and maybe just took a little bit of time for him to adjust. And I think that generally speaking, you're seeing these young guys adjust to the pace, the rhythms, the athletes that you're facing on the NBA stage and getting more comfortable with that. I think that's evident in the way that Bub has played and Keyshawn in particular. I think that they've also been more connected defensively. That's something you're seeing. I think Keyshawn in particular has actually been really impressive as a defender and really starting to grow in that area. So there's some good stuff. As far as the rest of the season goes, they're still trying to learn about these players, right? So they are going to test them as much as possible and see what they can and can't do. What does Keyshawn George look like running more pick and rolls, running more off ball or on ball actions? What does Bilal Coulibaly look like if he's empowered on offense in a way that he wasn't early? He has been a lot this season, but he's empowered now in a way where he has to be someone who takes 15 shots a game, like that kind of a thing. What does Alex Sarr look like giving the ball a little bit more? What does he look like playing a little more heavy minutes at center? Does the rim protection handle like that? Those kinds of things. They're learning more and more about these players so they can go into next year and start designing things with a better understanding of who these guys are.
Talking with Varun Shankar on the Rude Guest Hotline. Final one for you, Varun. You got these guys acquired in the trade at the deadline. You've got Marcus Smart. You've got Chris Middleton. How many minutes, what can we expect of them down the stretch, and how important is it? They talked about mixing a lot of these young guys. Obviously, that's been the focus of this season, young guys playing a lot of minutes. But how does that work with some of these veterans, and how important is it for these veterans with championship experience to come in and be able to teach these guys, however long they're here for?
Yeah, these are great guys to have in the room. I think Chris Middleton and Marcus Smart in particular have really good reputations in different ways. I think Middleton is kind of known as he really grinded his way as a second round pick and becoming a really consistent and above average NBA contributor, a champion, a goal. I think he won an Olympic medal as well. you also have a guy like Smart who's a little bit more fiery, I would say, just in terms of the way his persona has been, I think that he's someone who can, had a really big role in building defensive culture with the Celtics. And so that's obviously something the Wizards, not necessarily the Celtics part of it, but they do really want the defense to be a calling card of their team. So you can help in that area. As far as how the minutes break down, that's a great question because I don't really know yet. We'll see. I don't know what the minutes are going to look like for a guy like AJ Johnson. I don't know what I think they'll start Chris Middleton. I don't know for sure. We'll see. Where does Smart fit in? Because you start Middleton, right? You've got Poole, you've got Bilal, you've got Middleton, you've got probably Keyshawn, and then Sar. Now you've got Bub and Brogdon coming off the bench. There's only so many minutes to go around, and that's not even bringing in AJ Johnson. Now they might do some more injury management stuff with Brogdon down the stretch. He did get hurt, I think, the last game of the break, so we'll see what that looks like. But yeah, man, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how it shakes out, but it's going to depend on a lot of things, but I don't see them trying to sacrifice the development of the young players in any way.
Yeah, it seems like that's been the whole theme of this season. Hopefully it continues down the stretch, and hopefully it continues playing some good basketball down the stretch. Maybe not wins. I still want to see them, you know, get that top pick, but I wouldn't mind seeing some better basketball down the stretch like we saw the last couple weeks. Varun, appreciate the time, man.
Of course. Have a good one.
Check out Varun Shankar's latest work in the Washington Post. Alex Sarr has the freedom to fail and no fear in doing so. Really good story talking about, I mean, heck, Alex Sarr, remember everyone was talking about this guy in the summer league and how he's the dude missing all these shots. And just a couple months later, he's the guy that's winning Rookie of the Month. And he's been really impressive, one of the best rookies in the league this year. So check out his work at the Washington Post. Next, I want to continue talking a little bit about Wizards. And then at 3 o'clock, we'll get back in to the Commanders. There's some specific things I want in the wide receiver position. If we're talking about guys they're going to be bringing in, there's some different traits that I want in these receivers. We'll talk about that coming up at 3 o'clock. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Big thanks to our guy, Varun Shankar from the Washington Post, for joining us in the last segment. If you missed any of that, you can hit rewind on the Odyssey app or check out the podcast a little bit later. Wrote a great story on Alex Sarr. I want to talk a little more about the Wiz rookies. So Bleacher Report just put out a redraft, which my cousin was texting me about this the other day. He thinks it's the stupidest thing ever, and I don't necessarily disagree, but it is a fun little exercise just to kind of give an idea of, instead of just putting a list together of the best rookies to this point, just another fun way for us to do these things. But I thought it was interesting that when you look at the three guys that the Wizards drafted, that they're all above their original draft position. So we'll start with the third guy drafted, Keyshawn George. He was drafted 24th overall in this redraft. They have him going 18th. And he's someone that's really interesting where I don't know what his ceiling is as a player, but to me, he's a winning basketball player. He is a winning basketball player. Great defender. Someone that just, when you think of a modern wing, not a star, not a Kevin Durant type guy, but when you think of a modern wing, guy that can shoot from the outside, do a little bit of everything, good defender, long and lanky, when you think of a modern wing, Keyshawn George is right there. And I think when you have someone like that, that's a building block. To me, this was an issue for the Wizards for a long time, where I like what they did last year, where they swung big with a guy like Bilal Coulibaly. And this year, the second overall pick, you go with a guy like Alex Sarr. And who knows what they end up becoming, but they kind of swing big there. But for the longest time, when they would draft dudes like Rui Hachimura, a guy still here in Corey Kispert, even, I guess the lone exception would be maybe a guy like a Denny Avdija, but even he had a little bit of a limited offensive upside. When you draft guys that essentially are more role players, they might end up being as good as you expect them to be, but it doesn't do you much of a difference because you need legit guys that are the stars of the basketball team. They haven't had that. Keyshawn, to me, fits in that role player starter sort of role, and getting him in the late end of the first round is perfectly fine. It's perfect what you got from Keyshawn George, and so he's been someone that I don't know is being talked enough about as a Wizards draft pick. He's someone that's really good defensively. I think he's going to help them for a long time going forward, even if he's not a big-time name. But think of a really solid role player that can help play some winning basketball. I think he's someone that can do that. Their other guy drafted in the first round outside Alex Sarr was Bub Carrington. He was originally drafted 14th overall. In this redraft, they have him going 11th. And he's someone that's shown flashes. Now, he's intriguing to me because I don't know what his ceiling is. Is he a really good combo guard? Is he someone that's going to be maybe a sixth man down the line? Is he someone that works as that combo guard in the starting lineup alongside Jordan Poole and gives you 12 a night and can give you a little bit of everything? Because you remember his first game at Pitt last year, he went for a triple-double. He can do a little bit of everything as a guard. He can rebound. He can pass the ball really well. He can score a little bit. So I think the big thing for him is continuing to improve. But you see, to me, out of all of these guys, Sarr, George, Bub Carrington, you see the rookie moments from Bub a little bit more, and that's fine. He's a rookie, obviously, but you see it a little bit more. I think when the game starts to slow down for him a little bit more than it has already, which there have been times where he looks really, really comfortable and plays really, really well, but there are still some times when the game's just a little bit fast for him. I think when it slows down a little bit more for him, I think you'll see him really start to emerge. And then Alex Sarr, we talked quite a bit about him with Varun, but I think the intriguing part about here, and you know, he was drafted second overall in this redraft. They have him going number one overall. I like this last line. It says, Bacon is defensive tools and malleability, and frankly, the 19-year-old is the sole prospect from this rookie class that is providing glimpses into real star upside. I think he's got it. There's not a lot of dudes that play basketball that are his size and can move like he can and can do what he can do. It's all about refining it. To me, when Jason Tatum was drafted from Duke, it was something where you just needed to tighten the screws up a little bit and he could be a really good player. He could do a little bit of everything, but you just needed to tighten everything up a little bit. That, to me, is going to be Alex Sarr. Now, some of it, he's a little more raw, and so it's going to take a little more time, but if you can just tighten things up a little bit, I think his defensive upside is incredible, one of the better defenders in the league down the line, and I think if you can find some of that offensive game and find where he fits, I think you could end up with a really, really good player, maybe even a star down the line. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's dive back onto the gridiron, and let's talk about the wide receiver position. There's some certain traits that I want out of the wide receivers if they're going to be addressing that position this offseason, which they're going to be. There's some specific traits I want in the various receivers. We'll talk about that next here on The Fan.